I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
We want you to do your best.
Are you uncomfortable?
No, not at all.
All right.
The only thing that makes me uncomfortable is that I'm not allowed to kiss you. They said that specifically.
Yeah, they said we can't do that.
I don't know why they had to say it specifically. But now I'm totally thrown off by that. So for people that just listened to the podcast, today's a special episode.
Yeah.
We're here with Team First Cut, you know, at the Sales Hacker booth at Dreamforce.
Of course, yep.
So there's going to be a video to this episode.
Apparently.
There's going to be a link in the show notes.
Yep.
But if you can't watch the
video... We're going to embed the video in the blog post.
In the blog post as well.
How about that?
Yep. But if you can't watch the video for whatever reason, just imagining Heaton and I making out the entire episode.
Yeah,
if that
there you
makes
go.
You happy.
Yep.
All right, so today's episode of the Startup Chat is going to be about something a little bit funky. Heaton and I like to do this once in a while.
Make out?
Yeah. Talk about funky subjects, but that may be too.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that we want to talk about today, or the thing I wanted to talk to you about today, is a role that I see rise in significance in startups that does not yet have a name. I'm not even sure if it's really a role or if it's something that's been around forever, but I've been thinking about this, so I wanted to explore that further with you.
It has no name.
It maybe has
one. How do you describe it? Bring it on.
So here's the deal. I've been talking with a friend at his birthday party last weekend, and he was telling me about growing his remote team.
Yep.
And some of the challenges that they have that seem to be cultural and communication issues. And one of the tips, he was asking me about tips of how to create a really healthy culture. And one of the tips that I brought up, or one of the people that I started highlighting in our team, was somebody that what we call has like the motherly energy of the company. Like it's the cultural champion, the person that kind of has a warm energy, has a nurturing energy, and has established herself in the team without having a role or a title in that regard as the person that people trust with their issues.
Yeah.
Personal or professional.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was describing how important it is to have that type of a person in a team in general, but in a remote team even more so. And then other founders were chiming in, some people that had that person on their team, and some people that were lacking that, and we were discussing this whole
how do you create
thing.
That?
How do you find that person? Yeah. Why is that person important?
Yeah.
But I still don't know how to call that. Like, what is that? You know, in some teams, it seemed to be the office manager. In some teams, it seemed to be a person on the support team.
Yep.
In some teams, it was a co-founder.
Yep.
So it's hard to tell who's going to take on that like nurturing energy and what you call that person. But I wanted to talk to you about that. I was sure that you would have some thoughts.
Yeah. At Kissmetrics, at some point, I think it was about 30 people, we hired what I'm going to call right now, a Cecilia.
A Cecilia?
Her name was Cecilia.
Oh, okay.
Is Cecilia.
I was like, what? Is that some Greek mythology story that I don't know
just
about?
Just Cecilia.
So Cecilia.
And I had, when I first met her, she was coming off of being kind of like an office manager, admin type of person. And when I met her, I was like, oh, you can do so much more than that. You know, just based on kind of how her friendliness was with people and how she thought of herself. So I think, you know, that role after we hired her, this is a funny story. I actually talked to my co-founder, Neil, and said, I want to hire her. He didn't understand. He's like, no.
No, why?
I'm like, but I really want to hire her. He's like, okay. He calls me later. He's like, I made some budget to hire her. He was the one responsible for budget. It was good. And I was like, why? He's like, well, you really wanted to hire her. I was like, okay. And you never really want to hire someone that bad if I say no. I'm like, yeah, pretty much. So we hired her. And then 2 months later, he's like, oh, I get it. He's like, I understand. I understand why you wanted to hire her. And it's like, we had a remote team. We also had an office in San Francisco. And it was simple things like when Lars came to town, he had a specific beer he liked. Wasn't the easiest to find. Cecilia always found it and made sure it showed up and it was there.
Yeah.
Cecilia started conducting the exit interviews with the team members when they left.
Okay.
Cecilia would actually be responsible for a bunch of the first level interviews with the team members. Mm-hmm. The culture interview was her.
Yeah.
It should be everyone, but it was specifically her in our case.
Yeah.
I don't have an idea of a role or a title, but generally I think there's some companies that call them the happiness person or happiness manager. That's why you mentioned customer support.
Yeah.
In our team, I even totally forgot what we ended up having the role be, but it ended up merging into like some HR title just so that she could fit in a box.
Yeah.
Although she never fit in a box.
Yeah.
The cool thing about her now, just to give people an idea of the kind of person, she started studying NLP.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's neuro-linguistic
programming. Yeah.
and after that, now she's actually become more of a CEO / executive coach.
Oh, nice.
And she's really good at it. She did that for me. I was not the CEO at the company at the time, but I was responsible for a lot of people. And she actually did that for me. So when we wanted to talk about people, she always had a great way to talk about people in the company and what was going on with them. And she always was in the know.
It's so good to hear you talk about Cecilia. Because we have Mary, and Mary does a lot of the same things that you're describing with Cecilia.
Yeah.
We call her queen of culture, you know, head of culture.
Yeah.
She's also, she's also the entire HR department, if you want.
Yeah, so, exactly.
So, but like being our head recruiter and kind of being the person that's taking care of the recruiting process, of people being taken care of in our recruiting process, to doing the culture interviews, to doing the exit interviews, to doing organizing and planning our team retreats. Yep. All these types of things are kind of within her role.
Yeah.
But even more importantly, the one thing that I never thought about too deeply until I saw this in the last 2 years play out really strongly is that she is somebody that has instant trust in the team and company. Yep. And because maybe, especially because she doesn't have some kind of an intimidating title, right? She's not like the CEO, COO, even if it was
VP of something
or VP of something. Just because her role is a little ambiguous, people feel like they can open up. A, because she's an amazing person, has a really good sense for people, because she's very trustworthy, but also because she's not intimidating in some kind of hierarchy. She's not nobody's boss, technically. So people feel comfortable coming to her with issues and problems that they're not comfortably sharing with anybody else in the company.
Yep.
Right? And these are tiny little things sometimes, but they do add up.
Yep.
And having a person that people trust and come to and confide with can be an incredibly powerful thing for making small things stop at the beginning and never grow into big things.
Absolutely.
And for making people just feeling treated really specially in the company and feeling that they belong. So you need, sometimes in teams we like to talk about leadership and we like to highlight especially like this, the super overly aggressive, confident, alpha type person that knows, you know, the direction and leads from the front and does all these things. And I think that energy, that strong, dominant energy is important, but we forget to highlight in leadership and in a tribe culture how important there is to have a nurturing energy as well.
Yeah, more community oriented.
Yeah, so all right, so now that we talked about it and we realized that we both had a person like that, I feel like I did not know that this person needs to exist, so I was never looking for that person explicitly. Is that cool? Should startups just not look for that person? Should they do look for that person? How do we think about like...
I think it's like the way you said at that dinner that some people were coming and they're like, oh, I know who that person is in my company, or I don't know who that person is in my company. That person doesn't exist.
Mm.
So simply just looking and seeing, one, are you at a size where you need that?
Mm.
Usually, I mean, truthfully, I think founders are doing that role and playing that role for as long as they can.
Yeah.
Sometimes they continue to, right? But once you hit some scale, usually probably like around 20 people, 15 people, some number like that, you start realizing that the people who are taking care of it, the founders, aren't always able to kind of pay attention to everybody in that special way.
Yeah.
And then having someone that's either dedicated to that and also taking care of some of the sort of more traditional HR stuff or retreats and things like that is smart. So if you don't have someone like that in your company and you're over like about a dozen, 15 people, should probably consider thinking about, you know, whether you can budget that higher or what that looks like. And then usually, I think you're right, a lot of those folks tend to be office managers and admins to start with. I've seen that go really great and really badly.
Mm.
I've seen it go really great when that person is promoted, you know, into that role.
Yeah.
I've seen it go really badly when the person is just taking on those responsibilities and not, and still being perceived as who they came in, the role they came into the company for, right? And then they end up leaving and having that sort of upgraded role at another company usually. Because what I've learned is people who are really into that culture and community like that inside of a company, they tend to want to keep doing that.
Mm.
They're not somebody who wants to do anything else.
Yeah.
Like Cecilia is still coaching founders. Same thing, or CEOs or executives, right? And so I think it's just they gravitate towards it.
The one really important thing, I think, is to understand that a lot of the value that a person like this creates can't be measured as easily as other things, or cannot be measured at all.
Well, that's why my co-founder, Neil, wouldn't have it in the beginning. Like, he's like, well, I don't know. And he's like, oh, I get it. Like,
yeah. You know? So because oftentimes we look at people, we put them in certain buckets, right? And then it's like, you're the office manager. Are you doing a good office manager job?
Right.
You're the support person. Are you doing a good support job? But here's a person that usually you don't hire for that role as a full-time role.
Right.
It's kind of, we're looking for somebody everybody will trust and will nurture our team culture.
Yeah, that's
kind
of
a weird thing
to hire
for.
You don't hire for that in that way.
But then the person might emerge and take on that responsibility. Yeah. That's incredibly valuable, but you cannot really measure that. You can't really have KPIs. Be
that's
like,
right.
do people feel more nurtured and taken care of this quarter than last quarter? Like, it's a tough thing to really do. So it's one of those roles where I think if the founders or the top leadership, if you don't have culture and people as a priority and keeping a really healthy culture intact and making sure that people are really healthy and happy at work, then you're not going to be able to want to keep that person around or even promote that person in terms of their importance within the company, because you're going to have a hard time justifying that, because there's no number you can point to that makes this person really, really crucial to the overall company.
That's true. One thing I would say to that is that's why a lot of these people end up either stuck in HR or have kind of responsibilities that are HR oriented, and that kind of goes one of two ways. Like, if the person really wants those responsibilities on top of the sort of culture responsibilities, they'll gravitate towards it, and they might even want to have the KPIs, because there are KPIs there. If they don't, though, what do you do? That's kind of the big, I guess, question in my mind about this role.
Yeah. I just had a flash. I don't know if you ever watched what's the television show called Billions? Have you ever watched that?
Of course.
The Showtime show?
Uh-huh.
There's like a
one of the lead characters. Yeah.
And one of the lead characters, she's like the psychologist of the hedge fund manager.
That's awesome. That's the role. That's the exact role.
Right? I was just thinking about her.
No, that's the exact role.
And one thing I want to go back to quickly is in the beginning you said that in the early days, the founders typically, or one of the founders will take on that role. And usually the founding team are feeling pretty equal. Nobody's really intimidated by you being the founder, hopefully. And everybody speaks very plainly and openly about their issues and challenges, hopefully. And there's a high degree of trust. But as the team grows, even no matter